everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, December 3rd, 2014. I'm our ruler of time, and this is Rolo T. Chris, how's it going?
Nick! I almost said Chris, like I was talking to myself.
Okay. I'm doing great, Chris. How about you, Chris?
I was reciting the monologue I tell myself in the mirror every day. Chris, alright, I know that you're very unsure of yourself, but I think you're blossoming into a fine young woman. Wait, hold on. This is a different pep talk. No, I'm doing good, Nick. I'm a little frustrated, though.
What's that?
I've been replaying Fire Emblem Awakening, the 3DS Fire Emblem, and I love the Fire Emblem series, but I hate this fucking game because it is so frustrating.
Which one is that again?
It's the most recent one. A big aspect of it is that there's time travel involved.
Oh, and your future kids come in and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like a big aspect of that is getting those kids, and you can make the kids ridiculously overpowered by basically building the parents in certain ways, so stats of theirs and skills of theirs pass down to their children.
That's so weird. That's like taking like chocobo breeding and making it with people.
Yes, it is kind of disturbing that way. All of the kids' missions, like, to recruit them, are bullshit. They are all like, okay, fucking, here's your character, he's in the middle of a room, and there's 18 generals with silver spears all around them and snipers behind them, and then we're going to spawn 15 sages behind you who all have fucking bullshit skills, and suck it, just die. Over and over again, just die. And I have died about, like, 100 times trying to do these missions. I'm like, alright, just gotta keep grinding. And the process of grinding is just repeating these lame-ass spot patch missions against, like, old enemy groups, like, old characters. It's boring, it's lame, but I was like, alright, just gotta do it. And I'm doing one of the kids' missions, I get to the very end, I'm like, alright, I fucking did this one, I got my super overpowered kid unit now, they're gonna be great, all I need to do is send in my mage to finish this person off, and I miscalculated one number. I have like an 80% chance to crit. That'll do enough damage. One shot this guy. I miscalculated just a little bit. He had 2 health left, and he just happened to have a skill that if he survives the attack, then he immediately does that damage back to me.
Oh, God.
And then attacks again. And I was like, well, fuck! That was an hour and a half of work down the drain. And now I'm just it's sitting here, and I don't know if it's going to be touched again. Because there is an anger inside of me, Nick. Like, I feel like I need to put on a big red mask and, like, walk around and, like, just swing my hands and have explosions come out of ring posts. Like, I just have to let the monster kind of roam for a while.
The big red monster?
The big red. It's very sad.
You know what? It's weird. This is what a complete wrestling nerd I've become. I just realized, like, as we were starting up, that today is, like, the anniversary of December to Dismember. So, there's my excuse to bring it up.
Is that, I mean, you're not even going to talk about it, though. You're not even going to do it for Chronicles.
No, not even after all that stuff about Punk has come out. It's like, nope, still not going to touch that show. Nope, it's crap. Don't need to watch it.
You always talk about CM Punk interviews, Nick.
What, interviews?
Yeah, did you listen to it?
Yeah, I know. That's why I mentioned that. Why did I talk about those, though?
I don't know, because we're on our rambling, you know, banter topic at the top of the show.
I will at least say this. I'm glad that there is more information out about it now. It just took the better part of the fucking year.
He wanted to make sure no one had an agenda. And if there's anybody out there who has no agenda, it's Colt Cabana and his lame podcast.
Yeah, but that's someone with an agenda that he at least trusts.
Yeah, he's like, I know your agenda.
It's like, no.
You want more than 10 listeners this week.
Oh, God.
He's like, no, you don't understand. I have Devon's son on the show.
I actually ended up listening to the Live Stone Cold podcast before I listened to that Colt Cabana podcast.
I heard the Live Stone Cold was good. I didn't...
It convinced me to give his podcast another chance and listen to some more of it. Like, we talked about that in the past. Like, I was just like, I just hate how he just stops every 5 minutes to drop, you know, an advertisement.
It's like, so, Triple H, you said you tear your quad, you're in the walls of Jericho. Hold on, everybody, let me just tell you something about Alpha Brain.
Hold on a second, is he Texan or is he Foghorn Leghorn?
I somehow couldn't do a good Austin impersonation.
Well, I say, well, that's the bottom line, boy.
You Juhabach, what are you doing here?
Oh, God, if Juhabach ends up beating Ichibei with the stunner, I'll freaking freak out.
You'll mark the fuck out, bro.
Oh, I will mark out over Bleach, man.
Okay, shit, we should probably start talking about Kingdoms, because we have, like, nine...
Kingdom, yes!
We do actually have to talk about manga.
Yeah. So Go See the Awesome Podcast is actually really good. Oh, I will listen to it. Anyway, Kingdom has nothing to do with wrestling, except that both are forms of fighting, I guess. It is about the Warring Kingdoms period in China. And it was kind of recommended to us a great extent because people drew similarities, I believe, to Vinland Saga, saying that it's, you know, a seinen series that's very action-heavy, historical setting based on, you know, a real war or series of battles, I guess would be more appropriate to say. And
are you saying Shin isn't here, isn't a real person?
He's about as real as Thorfinn, yeah.
I like to dream that there was some, like, 7'8" Scandinavian dude who just...
Well, there was! There was a Torkel. I said that he's, like, Thorfinn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
There was a Torkel the Tall.
Did he huck tree trunks through people's chests?
You know... It's hard to tell, but, you know, he was a Viking, so, you know, a really big Viking. He could have punched out horses and then lifted them off the ground to force his attacks.
Good.
But, actually, the way that I ended up interpreting this series was, it seems to me sort of like what people kind of, when they look at an action series like, you know, Naruto or One Piece or something like that, they're like, oh man, what if this were like more adult and darker and stuff? And whenever they actually are talking about that, it's like, oh, you're just like people dying everywhere and titties everywhere and stuff like that. That's what they mean. But like, I think the ideal form of that supposed series, I think, would be Kingdom. Because a lot of times it really seemed to me like just a darker, more mature shonen action series, because it is so action heavy and it is so fast paced, despite the fact that it's 400 chapters long and counting.
I can absolutely see why people would look at this series and be like, oh, it's like Vinland Saga, for, you know, all the reasons you mentioned. You know, it has that, you know, same historical background and everything like that. The thing that I would say really separates the two of them, though, is that Vinland Saga took that setting and took that environment and became introspective on itself. It, you know, asked questions. It, you know, made comments about humanity and these characters. There's unfortunately nothing really like that in Kingdoms until very late in the series.
Yeah, it is very just like, let's just have fighting and more straightforward character development and, you know, just do it.
It's a story driven by its narrative and not by the characters or their, you know, conscious questioning of themselves or anything like
well,
that.
I would say that it is driven by the characters, but they have much more concrete external material goals or development, at least, than, you know, it's like, I have to find, you know, what the real meaning of being a true warrior is, or I have to, you know, discover whether vengeance is really worth taking, or whether vengeance is really something you dedicate your life to. In this series, it's just like, this is the goal, this is what they're doing to work towards it, and the goal, generally speaking, does not really change. The approach that they may take to the goal may change, but in the first chapter, Shin, our main character, is, you know, this peasant, this slave, basically, and he says, I want to be a great general, in, you know, and to go down in history as a great general. And chapter 400 comes around, and he's still working to become a great general, and he's working his way up the ranks.
He's very close now.
He's very close, but he's still working towards it, and so the series didn't, like, do a switch on you like that. Yeah. And I would say that both series are very good, but because of that difference, I very clearly draw a line between them that helps me distinguish between them and say, it's like, yeah, I can see where you were coming from with this, but if you look deeper, they're actually very different.
Mm-hmm. I would say there's one aspect of Kingdom that I think it does spectacular and probably does it better than Vinland Saga, and that's when it gets into these big battles there is just the
fight scenes are amazing.
There's a swell to it. An absolute swell as you just keep building towards a climax. And when it happens, it's incredible. It is one of the greatest feelings I've had reading a manga. And it's the moment where, like, I'm reading through the slow parts. I'm reading through the political moments. I'm reading through the, you know, bare character developments. And I'm just like, okay, this is okay, whatever. And then I get into that moment where a battle's happening. I'm like, holy shit, this is getting good. And it fucking hits that climax. I'm like, God, I want to read this forever! And then you get back to a slow part. You're like, why am I reading this again? Like, why is this...
And then about five chapters later, it's like, oh yeah, this is why!
There's a moment, that struck out to me. It's when they're first... It's tough to call them arcs, because they never really
Well, they
finish.
Go so quick. There's so little room in between the, you know, arcs.
Like I want to say, like, it's the battle against Jean. But I'm like, they haven't even finished, technically. Like, they're always fighting Jean. Like, it's not like they fucking conquered. It's like they're gone. But basically, they're having their first battle, and Aoki gives Shin's group a mission to basically dive the enemy lines and kill the general. And it has this awesome moment where, like, they're leading up into it, and, you know, the front line that's supposed to distract the enemy's army is starting to get decimated, and one of our favorite characters gets shot in the neck, and suddenly he, like, pulls it out, and he's like, don't stop fighting! And, like, then this big guy comes up, and then he's like, I gotta do this for my kid. They're like, you can't do it! And he's like, yes, I can! He fucking swings his giant club, and, like, they break through, and then half of them are like, we're tired, we can't keep going! Go on without us, Shin! He's like, I don't want it, but I will! Let's kill the general! And they dive after him, and then suddenly another group comes in from behind to keep the enemy from retreating, and he's like, I finally got in the way, but oh no, you might have more above me, but don't care, I'm gonna get away. And he's like, no, because our Lord's arrow has arrived. And Shin jumps in for him, and he's like, I can go! And he fucking cuts him in goddamn half, and I'm like, oh, this fucking series is awesome. And then, like, I'm, you know, 20 pages of, like, reading political dialogue. I'm like, why did I get into this?
Yeah. You want revenge for your sister. Whatever. Go fight more!
And then that moment happens, and I'm like, oh, yeah, cut his goddamn head off, Shin!
And then Ten's like, I want to be useful to someone. Who's like, fuck off. Go fight. Yeah, it's very easy, actually, to talk about this series, because its strongest point really is just the way that the battles kind of come about and unfold. And I want to say it's just fighting and fighting and fighting and nothing else. Because there are definitely series that are like that, and they are dull as fuck after a while because it's nothing but fighting. Mm-hmm. The characters, there's enough characterization in there. There's just, like, the perfect amount where it's like, I want to keep on following this guy. I want to keep on seeing, you know, how far he gets and trying to get towards his goal. I want to see how much stronger Shin gets. I want to see, you know, these new people, how he interacts with them, and what the mysteries of them are about. And meanwhile, the Shin is doing all sorts of cool shit with his sword. And there are
faces.
I have no idea how many pages in this manga are just Shin jumps at somebody, and the next page or two pages are him being in the air behind them, and this, like, wound is appearing across their body, and they've got a shocked face. And it never gets old.
It's a series that gets phenomenally better when it gets into these battles, because it does, as you said, it has these small moments of character development in these guys that you're like, I can suddenly dig this so much more. The reason why all this emotion swells is because you do see these characters you have brief affection for, and you see how they're reacting. You know, you see this group of characters who Shin is, you know, united with, and they're just like, so many of us are tired, you have to go. And, like, that's a big kind of character moment for these guys. You see them kind of drive forward, and you're getting behind it. It's cool seeing these very exaggerated characters too, like Aoki, this enormous, very fey, but, like, ridiculously skilled guy who seems like he's, like, 9 feet tall too. And just, mm-hmm. when he shows up in a scene, you're just like, oh god, this guy is unnerving, because he'll just murder you. And he'll just flip his giant little spear, and just all of a sudden, people's heads will go flying off. You're just like, oh. But, you know, then you have the characters like...
Are you talking about, the general?
I was talking about Aoki, the monstrous bird.
Oh, yeah. That... I am terrible with names in this series, honestly.
yeah, well, he was...
Is he the guy with the weird lips?
Yeah, I was about to say. He's okay. The big blue or big black lips or whatever.
Yeah.
But, a character like him. But then you have your smaller characters like... I'm going to forget their names. The two brothers were from the village where Shin is from. They're the ones who first joined his Go group. You know, they're kind of there, and, you know, you don't get a whole lot of development for these characters. They're almost kind of novelties at some point, but you've grown enough of an affection to them. They're not offensive or bad people in any way, so you're like, I kind of hope these guys survive, and having them in these battles where they are threatened, you're like, oh shit, this, you know, I'm excited to see where this goes, and they help drive that emotion forward. It just makes the battle so much more epic and cool, but I find it was hard to get as excited about a battle if Shin wasn't involved in it. Like, there are periods...
Because he's so invincible at times.
They're so invincible, and it's also just a matter of, like, a lot of these other guys are assholes. It's one of the weird times where, like, there really is no protagonist outside of Shin, because if you're like, oh, well, no, Shin is, you know, the capital city, they're the ones who want to go through. Like, Shin's actually kind of an asshole. Their goal, like, the whole king's idea is, like, I want an era of peace, which I will achieve through conquering everyone else via war.
Well, and the funny thing is that history shows that he was correct to do so.
It's absolutely correct. But that's a question, like I said, I was like, you know, you normally have your characters like, I want to bring this world to peace. And then you're like, well, if you're going to do it through battle, don't you have any questions you want to say about that or how it conflicts you? And he's like, no. Well, I'm right.
Well, the funny thing, the thing is that I think if you brought that up, then... like, it wouldn't be as effective, because in order to do something like conquering China, then there probably wouldn't be much room for self-doubt.
Yeah, no, not necessarily, but it's just one of those things no one at all, like, really kind of questions these characters. But if you look at it, you're like, there's really no good person in this. It's all war, so, you know, it's all different degrees of awful, essentially. But just like Shin, because he cuts people's faces in so many amusing ways.
Shin is an interesting kind of character because, for the most part, you know, it's this very brutal, time, and also there's this great segmentation of the way society works. There's this tremendous expectation that people of different classes will behave in certain ways, and Shin is just such a shonen idiot asshole that he spits in the face of all of that without fucking blinking, but he's too big of a badass for him to ever get his comeuppance for it, basically.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, hey, you're in court with the king. And he's like, oh, hey, what up, say? And it's just like, you fucking...
How could he talk to the king?
He's the goddamn king!
And then say is like, hi, Shin.
It is kind of weird, because...
And then he'll mouth off to Oki, and they're like, oh my god, Oki's gonna kill him. Oki's like, I like you, kid!
It's just also kind of weird because, you know, you imagine that Shin has this very rough way of talking. And they kind of get that across. They give him a lot of slang. And there are moments where it just sounds a little bit awkward. Like, he's like, oh, hey, hecky bro. Like, what? There's something weird about, like, imagining this, like, BC ancient Chinese character being like, yo, basically, what up, bro? Like,
yeah, essentially.
What up, my king man? Just like,
what up, bitches?
Wacky high fives.
Doing gang signs. And like, what the fuck are you doing with your hands, peasant?
He's got a Yankees hat on sideways.
Takes his shirt off. Is like, I've been tanning in the gym. Where'd you get that absurdly tight shirt with no sleeves? It took me a long time to buy this because no one would sell anything to me.
That actually brings up one of my favorite moments of the series. This isn't a series necessarily that's very funny. There are moments of humor in it, but they're kind of few and far between. But
there's occasional gallows humor, and then you've got your occasional low points where it's allowed to be a bit lighter.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
But there are omaki chapters at the end of the volume. And one of the omakis is, this is right after Shin's bought his first suit of armor, and he's like in his house polishing it. And then someone comes outside his house, like, the king is going to be assassinated. He's like, let's go. And he gets in the carriage. And he's like, wait, my armor. And he runs back and he puts a cloak over his armor so no dust will get on. Then just jumps back on the cart.
And they're like, what the fuck was that about?
There are great moments like that in the series, and it's almost a shame that you're like, God, this could even be a funnier series if they throw that in there. It'd be very jarring, but goddamn, I like these moments of humor.
I think that they're fine the way that they are, honestly. It would be so weird to go, like, directly from, like, Kyokai going from explains, like, you know, my sister and I were raised from a young age to be assassins, and we had to go into this battle and slaughter all the other girls there. But I was, you know, put to sleep before the battle, so I missed it. And then I was supposed to be disgraced, so I slaughtered all the crones, and now I've sworn vengeance on the woman who killed my sister. And then suddenly go to, ah, my armor! Oh, I gotta make sure it's not dusty!
Squeak it!
So, yeah, I think that would be a bit too jarring.
We'll never know.
Well, I guess not. Yeah, I really like this series, but it's, once you get into it, it's very easy to understand what it's about, and because of that, it doesn't really merit too much discussion, because you know, it's what you see is what you get. This is a very good series, and it's a series that has gained a lot of recognition. It's won a Tezuka Award, for example. And there are people who are like, oh man, it's so great. I mean, it's like 30 volumes long, but it's still so good, and I just gotta keep on reading. And I felt that way too. You know, it's hard to read as much of this series as there is and do it essentially in a row and then be like, I could have more.
It's also kind of cool. I think it has a world record for having the most artists on a manga because of the...
I saw that factoid, yeah.
Yeah, there was one volume where he basically, said, anybody can draw this, like, draw, like, a... part of this, and like, you know, Oda and Kishimoto and a whole bunch of other, like the Araki, all drew pieces that have been in Kingdoms, so I thought that was pretty cool. So you'd give it a recommendation?
Oh yeah. Well, if you like the same type of manga that we like, you'll like it, basically.
I have a harder time giving this a recommendation. I really liked Kingdom. I really did enjoy it. It's just one of those things where after I was done, I was like, what do I really have to say about this? Like, it's a series that, in the moment, I think is great. When you especially get those, you know, big battles where all these things are happening, all these tactics and generals and wackiness is happening, like, it's great. But then there are moments when it's not happening and just kind of following along with the paces, and I'm just like, there's nothing special about this series otherwise. And I'm almost to the point where I'm like, if you are thinking about reading this and you haven't read Vinland Saga... just read Vinland Saga. If you're,
I can see that.
If you've already read Vinland Saga, then yeah, this is certainly something I would say go into. But I feel like it's a very specific kind of audience to jump into this in. I mean, if you like,
I can totally understand that. Yeah.
If you love battles, if you love all that stuff, then yeah, you're gonna dig it. But it is, you know, very much a very macho battle action fighting fight kind of series. And if that's not your deal, then yeah, you're going to be like, I don't get this at all. Why does no one just kill this dude? How does everybody keep losing to this asshole when they have like 80-1 advantages over him?
Also, little criticism. Like, the only two, like, important female characters in the series have, like, the same shtick of just being disguised as men.
As being disguised as men who clearly look like women from the beginning.
It took me a little while for a 10.
Yeah.
Because she's a child.
Uh-huh. And she wears like a big wacky costume, so all you see is her face. But she still has very feminine eyes.
Yeah, and then like, Kyokai comes in, got the eyelashes, got the long hair, got the thing, the very obviously trying to hide my facial features clothing, not talking a whole lot so as not to stand out. You're a girl.
Yeah.
You're a girl. And then it's like, one comes along even before the other has been found out by the rest of the cast. Largely because Shin is an idiot, but, you know. Actually, at first when I saw, the first time that I saw Hyo, you know, guy who looks like Sei, who is Shin's childhood friend, I thought that he was a girl.
Yeah, I thought it was a girl as well until, you know, it actually comes up. Like, no, it's a dude, and he's dead, so, you know, deal with it.
And now here's another dude who looks just like him. Yes, it's a dude. No,
yeah, that guy's also a guy, yeah. calmed out.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's definitely got a really good hook, I think, because the story of the series basically is that Shin and Hyo are these two slaves who lead this very meager existence, but they both have this dream that they'll be great generals one day, and, you know, go down in history and have many glorious battles and stuff like that. And they spend all their time, their spare time, sparring with one another. They're like battle obsessed. They've had like over 1,000 spars with each other, and they're both like 10 when the series starts off. And so basically Hyo is like recognized by this one, woman is noble. Let's call him noble. Who is like, yeah, come along with me and you'll serve in the king's palace. And he's like, can I take Shin with me? No.
Fuck him.
So, like, there's this, like, great fake-out where they have this conversation while Hyo is, like, mulling over. And he's like, Shin, you know, if you can't come with me, then I won't go. Did you think I was going to say some sentimental crap like that? Because I'm going. He's like, so, you know, just, we're separating here, but we'll meet up again eventually. And then he comes back and he's, like, taking a spear through the chest. And he's like, okay, you got to go here and carry on my legacy. Bye.
He's like, may not be able to fill out my dream. Got to do it for me. Okay, thanks, bye.
He's like, ah, revenge! And he rushes off and he's like, you look just like Hyo! And he's like, yeah, he was my body double. Oh, so that's why he was recruited? Yeah.
That means I'm better than him! Yeah!
He doesn't say that. What are you talking about?
I just like to fill in the gaps. They never actually explain who wins that last battle, though, do they?
No, they don't. They have, like, one last spar, and, like, at the time, Hyo is leading by one, so he says, this will be our last sparring session, at least for a while, so this one counts for two. So the winner will have the lead, you know, going forward. And they never say who won it.
No. I imagine maybe that'll be like an end of the series kind of thing. Or maybe they'll just...
Like a really important flashback for Shin or something like that. Where he's like, you know, about to die. He remembers his promise to his friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Like I said, you know, it's got enough character, but... There is not a tremendous amount of it to discuss. And so I would just say, like, you know, if you like well-drawn action scenes, then you're going to be able to get into this, I think.
Also, if you like military kind of tactics, this series has a lot of that.
Well, some military tactics and some, I am such an awesome general that I give a +1 buff to all of the men who follow behind me.
There are moments where characters are defined by the fact it's like, he's so ridiculously badass, he defies strategy. All the best laid plans are worthless because he's so awesome.
If you love Dynasty Warriors and you want a manga version of Dynasty Warriors, this is the manga for you.
Basically. But there are a few moments of cool strategy.
Yes, there are. Yeah. Also, Say's flashback is really sad.
Say's, and there was another one right after that. Oh, Kyo.
Kyokai's, yeah.
Yeah. That was the one I was thinking of.
That one's like just like that one's way more hardcore vengeance world, whereas Say's is like, you know, very character establishment. Like, this is why he wants to do stuff, and this is why you should get behind this guy as he conquers people while slaughtering their children and men, and so on and so forth.
I also I like the way they set that up, because it was kind of clear when they, you know, started. It was like, well, all these characters have to die. How does Say survive?
And but you know, he says like. Now I'm going to tell this story, and there's like narration that says this is a story with I think it's like the concubine narrating where she's like, you know, he told me this story and it had a very sad ending. Mm-hmm. Like, not, making no illusions about it.
Oh, you know, I was just, I applaud the way it was kind of structured that, you know, these characters are going to die. You're like, how do they die? And he gets where he needs to get. You're like, oh, a fucking carriage of death.
Like, yeah, everyone... It's like, you know, as soon as they start getting chased, like, all those people are going to die except Say.
Yeah, and I like the way they
kind sure of enough, it up. But Jesus Christ, seeing that one pin cushion does not get any less heart-wrenching knowing it's coming. Also, I sort of like that concubine girl. I keep forgetting her name, but whatever.
She had a name?
Yeah. She had a friend...
She does. And
with, like, the exact same name, but, like, one is, like, Yo and one is Ko or something like that. I don't know. But, yeah, he's just like, oh, my God, I'm being taken to the king's bed. Tonight's the night I lose my virginity. You're just like, reading. You want to hear a story? Sure. Look at the moon. It's awesome, right?
Yeah. Will you finger me while you do it? No.
I don't know how to do that. I don't really care but to do that.
I'm reading.
Need both my hands to flip the pages. Yep. Can I? No. Not into it. No. Yeah. Might be asexual.
Who knows? I might just spawn children by fucking mitosis. So.
I mean, maybe that's how Hyo came into the world, you know? Maybe we were born from... Maybe he was born that way, you know?
Yeah, I just...
Who's Hyo?
Let me tell okay, you
once upon a time.
I have another sad story to tell you.
I wasn't there for most of it, but I think that Shin may have embellished the details for the parts I wasn't there for.
I'm just going to fill in the blanks from when I wasn't there and add more characters who die that's really sad.
So Shin had this friend who looked just like me, and they sparred every day, and apparently Shin won 2,000 battles out of 2,000. They were banging hot women that fucked him every day.
But then a bunch of grandmas came up and all died so that they could eat. Because all my stories have to be sad.
Well, he'll dies at the end of that one. It's sad enough. Anyway. But yeah, I'm just like bringing in details I can remember after we basically finished talking about the series anyway.
But ultimately, yeah, guys. Check it out if it's something that sounds interesting to you. But, you know, use your discretion. If it sounds something interesting, go for it. But if not, you might be better served not going into it.
Especially because it's 400 chapters long. Yeah. If you're the type of person who can't read a series without finishing it, you have been warned.
And this is really one of the better kind of series to read in bursts. Because reading one of those fights one chapter at a time would just be fucking... It sounds like it would just be painful to me.
Probably. Probably would not have liked this as much if I had to go as like, time for the next moment in the battle, which you have to wait a week for. Time for the next moment, you know,
they
same way.
They smashed the line! 1 week later, they broke the line! Next week later, they met the general! Next week later, they're fighting the general!
Yeah. Would probably not have liked it as much if I had to read it that way. But yeah, that said, positive recommendation for me, kind of meh from you, but pretty good overall. Recap portion of weekly manga recap time. Let's start off with Bleach 607, The Master. So, last time Ichibei was like, oh, how do you feel that your power is cut in half? And Juhabak responds, you're the ringleader of Squad Zero who stands atop the Soul Reapers. You fear my power enough to cut it in half. What could feel any better than that? Well, having half your power while he's afraid of your power would probably put you in a better position. People make stupid boasts in manga. You ever notice that? Always someone has to find something to brag about in an unconvincing fashion. Always.
Well, Nick, he says it because immediately after that he's like, oh, and I have all my power back too.
By the way, yoink! I can just give my power back to myself!
He's like that fucking kid that you used to play, like, imaginary fights with. You're like, I cut you, and now you fall down. He's like, no, I have a shield of plus immune cutting armor, so you can't cut me.
Or it's, it's that guy who's like, no, I'm a Namek, and my arm grows back.
Yeah, it's just like, no, I'm a ninja, so I dodge. He's just like, God.
This is why every RPG requires fucking participation.
Yeah, it requires...
It's not about winning everything. It's about cooperation. Get that through your fucking heads. Six-year-olds and munchkins everywhere.
I like to imagine that you're playing at a table of nothing but six-year-olds, and you're just, like, infuriated. You're just like, come on, guys! Can we get some role-playing going on?
I would never play D&D with six-year-olds. Ever. Gotta wait till they're at least eight.
Yeah, then they're in their prime story. Then they're in their prime age of narration.
Well, I started playing D&D when I was either, like, 9 or 10, so... Yeah.
Do you have great adventures back then?
It was
weirdly a lot of murder back then. A lot of child kidnapping. We got into the war on drugs. That was strange.
did very basic adventures. I think a lot of stuff from a book. But yeah, anyway. So, getting back into it. Yeah, Geobox, you know, actually says, what is he even? Does he even explain his powers, or he just says, like, no, I have it back. Meh. Yeah.
Well, it's just like, unfortunately, I can give it back to myself. Yeah, I'd explain it, But you wouldn't understand.
No, he says, I'll explain it if you can't understand. And then he says, nobody can take anything from me. Not even with that power of yours. And if you can't understand right here, right now, I'm making up my speech off the top of my head. Give me a moment here. Oh, right. Everything in this world is mine to take. Yeah, that's a strong line definition.
Oh, yeah. That was a good stuff.
And they attack Ichibei with a whole bunch of projectiles.
It'd be great if Ichibei was like, so you're bullshit.
Ichibei, like, catches the projectiles in his hands and they, like, crumble into dust. And he says, you know, I was actually kind of being nice to you. I just cut your power in half so that I would, you know, preserve your honor. Because, you know, you would lose face to the Quincy's if I crushed you while you were at full strength.
You would lose so much fucking rep with the Quincy's if I killed you instead of just cutting your power in half.
Yeah, I think that he actually says that at some point. He's like, oh, well, you know, come to think of it, you'll be dead, so that won't really matter. Might as well just kill you.
So you're an idiot, Ichibei. You're a goddamn moron who could have killed him in one blow, but you were like, I'm going to cut you in half. Why? Oops.
So he uses some sort of super special keto technique, and Geobox summons a dome shield around himself to deflect it. And he's like, oh, it's Blutvein. Yes, it's Blutvein Alfhibane. It expands the protective barrier to outside of the body. Why doesn't everyone do that? So he's like, okay, whatever. He uses Secret Hado, which is, he summons a puff-cheeked dragon face that inhales the shield, I think. Or does it exhale and burst the shield? I don't know. It's hard to tell. Either way, that dragon face looks, like, really weird. And then he just, like, grabs Jubok around the throat, and Jubok's like, did you just touch me? I report you for sexual harassment.
Bad touch, bad touch!
I need an adult! I am an adult! But yeah, he says, like, you know, this is Blutvein Alfhibane, which corrodes everything that comes in contact with my body! So Ichibei is like, whatever. And he just, like, flexes the muscles in his arm, and the Blutvein, like, ripples off of his body, and he just keeps on choking Jubok. Jubok does something to get away? Or what does even happen? I don't know. It's hard to follow action in Bleach sometimes. So Ichibei kind of backs off after that happens, and he's like, you trespassed into Ryokyu, you trespassed into Squad Zero's body, the vassals of Ryo, enough of your insolence, you lowly human, it's time for your punishment! And he releases his sword with the command, paint it black, insert Rolling Stones reference, and his paintbrush now has a blade instead of a brush, and it is called Ichimonji, which is the kanji for one, so. He, like, makes a horizontal slash the way that you know, draw one in Japanese. Yeah.
And he does his Undertaker pose again.
Yeah. Why didn't you do this at the start of the fight, Ichibei? Why does every Bleach character ever have to wait for, like, escalation this way? I know it's just like, because shonen battles go that way. It's a fucking war. Kill him!
It's a situation where he is broken into the fucking home of your god that he wants to kill, and you want to eliminate him. But you still were like, well, I don't want to punk you out. So I'll just cut your power in half and then beat you up. The logic doesn't even make sense. Because I was like, if you cut his power in half, then you school him afterwards. Wouldn't that just make him look even lamer? And you're like, oh, he wasn't even the challenge. He's like, no, I put him on a fair level. I don't even know. But Ichibei is not as impressive as I once thought he was.
Yeah, if you were to beat your opponent after breaking their leg and forcing them to hobble around for a bit looking pathetic, they would not go down with more honor than if you just beat them straight up.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to Fairy Tale.
We actually have E-Robot, Nick. How could you forget? Chapter 2.
Very easily. Chapter 2, The Truth About I and the Erotic. Okay. So, this series was not canceled after one chapter, against my wishes, and this chapter is about Ai's first day at school, and something happens so that her
bee comes in.
Her buttons burst, and she attacks a bee with the buttons.
See, it's a very specific thing. A bee comes into the room, so to chase it away, she fires the buttons off of her shirt.
And then she needs to get a new uniform top.
That is a skill that she has.
And then Yuki is concerned that Hikari has still got the wrong idea about him and I, and there is a trolling knot from a hentai doujinshi panel where he's like, she thinks that we're more than just friends. And there's like a little note that says, this scene is imagined. No shit! And so I is like, oh no, there is nothing between Mr. Yuki and I. We're extremely distant relatives. And she like latches onto his waist for some reason to emphasize this. And he's like, don't cling to me like that. And he pushes her away. Oh, he accidentally did it by her breasts because wacky. And she's like, oh no, you're activated by boob projectiles, you know, like from the last chapter. So squeeze them again in order to cancel the activation. And so they like rush off somewhere, and Hikari is really dead.
She's like, you have to do it or the school will be reduced to rubble. And I'm like, weren't you supposed to be a robot of peace? Weren't you supposed to be a robot specifically designed to show how eroticism could end violence and conflict in the world? But you're obviously loaded with boob missiles that if your breasts are touched wrong, they'll fire and you can't deactivate them yourself?
Certain very stretched definitions of peacekeeping, which, not to get political, but moving on. So, yeah, so they go off to, like, some staircase somewhere, and I is like, oh, I know, how about if I use my heart-pounding perfume, I could turn the entire population of the school into perverts who will just have an orgy, and then you'll be normal, because everyone in the school will be a pervert, and people won't think you're a pervert. And he's like, no, don't do that. As she is, like, demonstrating what her pervert perfume can do, and it like flows through the air vents and infects the entire school, and the entire rest of the chapter is, oh my god, schoolgirl fantasy, more schoolgirl fantasy. Oh, she's wearing a schoolgirl uniform. No, this one's wearing a cheerleader's outfit. This one's wearing a school swimsuit. This one's from the judo club, and they're all in various states of undress and trying to jump Yuki's bones. And so I has to, like, tickle them all in increasingly erotic fashions, and then she subdues the boys by posing half-naked so that they just have nosebleeds and die from blood loss. And then Yuki confronts Hikari on the roof and is like, look, you don't understand. I, you know, it's like, she's not that way with me. And I jumps on his back and pushes him into Hikari, and they all fall down, and they're on top of each other, and he's pressed between the breasts, right between the breasts. And then she's like, look, I was wondering if you guys were really just trying to help or if you were just gross perverts, and I'm sorry for misunderstanding. Obviously, you are both not perverts after you just tried to make the school into perverts and had to take your clothes off to make them stop being perverts. So, yeah, I'm glad you're completely normal. Also, stop groping my tit and get off of me. I just had this entire conversation with you while you were squeezing my titty.
But I like you now.
And then at the end of the episode, it turns out I is staying with Yugi and she wears a naked apron.
And she's like, what? I thought aprons counted as clothes. I was like, why did you build an idiot robot? Why didn't you add, like, logic into this fucking robot, you stupid goddamn inventor?
There's probably going to be a chapter eventually where it turns out there's, like, a dial on her back that, like, you know, switches her between, like, you know, enchantingly naive mode and, like, mega sexual predator, expert in all things erotic mode.
Yes.
Where she just, like, ties people up and stuff.
Somehow, I imagine that dial is probably somewhere in her nether regions. Maybe, like,
probably
tightly up her butt crack. So to turn it on and off, they have to just dive bomb in there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the robot. Fucking 5 stars for 12-year-olds who don't know how to use fucking Google.
One more week, Nick. Unless it stays in the magazine.
I swear to God, I will kill someone.
With Takujo no Agiha and the fucking Gaikyo Hote this week, if either of those series don't make it in, but E-Robot does, there's going to be some very angry... Well, I'm going to say there's going to be two angry people on this podcast. Just like, they're too good. If you wanted your shameless fan service, at least go for the one that's funny. All right.
So now let's do Fairy Tale.
Fairy Tale, chapter 411, to respond in kind. And as if to follow up from this, the series we talked about, the cover page...
God damn it, this is so creepy.
The cover page is Urza, and she's kind of, like, only wearing a bra, and she's, like, in a very seductive pose, and the text is...
She's wearing, some sort of, like... It's like a tube-top type of bra type of thing, but she's also wearing, like, almost shoulder-length gloves, and, like, some sort of... veil or scarf?
Yeah, some kind of scarf.
Is she cosplaying as something?
I don't think so. I think it's just that sexy design. And a text saying, you dream of Urza. Urza's looking sexy with a knowing smile on her lips, and she's going to tell you whatever you want to hear. Write in her dialogue, this is your chance. And there's a little empty dialogue box next to her where I guess this is where fucking nerds are like, please... Toji, put it in me, you big fucking stud, or something like that. But I want to, like, take it and just write in, like, oh, I had so many tacos here, and now like, I'm gassy.
Excuse me, dear, can you hold my hair while I throw up?
just text its irrelevance, just her, like, I didn't care for Breaking Bad. I thought it was a little bit too preachy. You're just like, well, that's not sexy at all, Urza. But anyway, we actually get to the chapter itself, and we pick up with the giant crater created by Memento Mori, where Marred Gear is totally, totally victorious, Nick. He definitely won. He killed both Natsu and Gray, and they're dead, and they're never coming back. Because this is Fairy Tail, and they finished off the two big characters at once. Oh, wait, no, they survived.
Until the dust clears.
Yeah, the dust clears, and they're like, oh, holy shit. Gray saved them both by going into a partial demonic transformation as part of Gray Silver's power. And he's like, to make a better future, this is all I could do. It's up to you, Natsu. Oof. So,
Natsu, I'm not going to be able to fight for the rest of the fight until the end of the chapter.
Yeah, then I'll get back up to kill Steel. Suck it. Anyway, Marred Gear transforms back into his ethereal form, and Natsu is beating the shit out of him. I don't know how, when he was with Gray, they couldn't stand up against him, but now him on his own.
Because Nakama, Chris.
He's like, you've accessed the Dragon Force! And he's like, now you...
You didn't even say it right, you said Dragon Form.
No, he says Dragon Force.
Yeah, you said Dragon Form, though.
I may have just slurred a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly. Anyway, Dragon Force.
Go ahead.
He's like, I learned it from Nat Ignell itself. It's like, I know, you've done this frequently. You do this once or twice an arc. I don't know why he's acting like a...
Yeah, but he's telling that to Marred Gear.
Marred Gear should know. I mean, Marred Gear is the smartest of us all. And he punches
Marred Gear is super intelligent and all-knowing.
And he punches him with some big dragon attack called Blaze of Fire... Phoenix Sword! God, I love and hate the names of attacks in this series so much because they're so cheesy. What does that even mean?
Whenever, like, Natsu uses, like, because there's only so many different things you can call, like, I punched you or headbutted you or kicked you with something surrounded by fire. And there's, like, something new each time. And then whenever it gets into stuff like, you know, Phoenix Blade... Or Phoenix Sword, or something like that. It's just like, that looked nothing like a sword.
Yeah. Blade of Fire, or Blaze of Fire, Phoenix Sword! I'm like,
it's like,
where?
Form a sword in your hands, and cut somebody with the sword, and then you can call it Phoenix Blade, / Phoenix Sword, / whatever. It's like, I headbutted you, it's a sword. No! If anything, that's like a spear, or a hammer, or a batting ram. It's not a sword! The dreaded scout-mounted sword.
But Marred Gear's flying in the air, but he's like, no, not yet, I will destroy you! And he grabs Natsu's head, and Natsu's like, oh man, I gotta say I'm depressed. My magic power is down to zero, but I got trust too, you know? I don't know why he's become Sylvester Stallone, but
yes.
He got very punch drunk very quickly.
Gray, do it! Gray's like, da! Haruma Zeno no Haku! That was my Arnold Schwarzenegger as a Japanese boy firing an ice arrow. Which is going to
fairy
be...
Fairy tale if it were adapted into an 80s action film.
The fairy tale Expendables.
Yeah.
And he pierces Mard Gear's chest with a giant arrow of ice because, as you called, Nick, he was too tired to continue the fight. Except for literally 15 seconds later, where he got back up and used his special strongest attack. And he shoots Mard Gear right to the chest. Mard Gear starts falling. And we cut away over back to the fight with Urza and Kyoko. And as Mard Gear's falling, he's like, Kyoka, be at ease. And Kyoka is smiling. And that's when Minerva's like, oh, she's smiling. It must be because. And they look. And the clock says 00. Face on. And we're kind of back to where we were before. Dun, dun, dun. Do you think all magic's going to be destroyed from the world, Nick? I think so. I think it could happen.
Do you believe in magic? No.
If I believe in my friends, Nick, it'll happen. I just need to get some friends.
You just gotta get a bunch of friends. Like, Chris jumps into the series and gathers up all the fallen members of Fairy Tales Defeat and holds hands with them. We believe in no magic!
We believe in Fairy Tale losing! We believe in Fairy Tale dying!
It's like, hey!
And I'll find some fucking six-year-old with magic powers, age her up to 100 without changing what she looks like physically.
I don't think that she's six, okay?
She looks like she's six, though.
Like she looks like she's 12.
All right, she looks like she's 12. I'll age her up to be 200 years old, but then I'll always leave her naked because fucking perverts. And then
but her hair will
cover
will
any cover naughty everything. Bit. Yeah, and then she'll save us all. It'll be fucking, I got this plan down straight. Perfect.
And then all, like, mystique about her will be completely banished when she's just, like, a regular character for a full arc, and she's just goofing around doing nothing.
She's just shitting on people. She's like, man, fucking Elfman kind of blows.
Buried.
Alright, yeah, so that's Fairy Tale this week.
Alright, let's move on to Shokugeki no Soma, Food Wars. Chapter 96. Seven.
Moonlight Memories.
Yes. So, I love the action jump this time, because Akira and Kurokiba have revealed their pikes, and they're, like, holding them up, and they're both, like, glinting because of how pristine they are, and Soma's holding his up, and it's covered in whatever the fuck. It still hasn't been revealed what he's covered in yet. And they're, like, all looking at his panel, with, like, what the fuck did he do expressions, and someone's like, ah!
It's, like, the same, like, badass poses they were in before, but now it's the comedic, like, what the fuck? And he's just like, yeah, look what I did, guys. I did a smat thing.
And, like, the sound effects for Akira and Kurokiba's fish are shimmer, are in gleam, and his is flump.
Flump is a great sound effect, by the way.
Green shimmer? Flump. So everyone's like, what the fuck did he do? Next page is Erina wearing a kimono, being like, yeah, I know you like your fan service, but sometimes I like to bring in boys by wearing more clothing, and fans of Food Wars are like, yay! I don't know how to use Google. At least the rest of the series is good, though. So, everyone is reacting to this, and Soma is like, hey guys, how you doing? Why are we having the match so early in the evening? You know, basically making small talk and stuff, and they're like, what the fuck is up with your pike? What the fuck did you do? And Kirky's like, if I were in berserk mode, I would punch you in the mouth. And Soma's like, what, you call it berserk mode? And he's like, well, yeah. That's what, you know, Miss Alice calls it. Oh.
What else would you call it?
It's like, what a nerd. So, Akira is like, oh man, you know, you're so far behind us. You picked a low quality ingredient. This match is already decided. And he's like, oh well, congrats on third place. Which for you, that's not too bad. Such a dickbag thing to say.
He's like, congrats on third place. Pretty good job considering it's you. It's like, well, what else was he gonna get?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because it's, I guess they've sort of positioned Akira as, like, the real nemesis for this chapter. It's, you know, it's a triple threat type of thing, but Kurokiba, because of his association with Alice, kind of gives him more main character type of status. Like, it seems like he's more important to the series overall, so he's sort of more in the middle, like, somewhat sympathetic, but of course also very intimidating, whereas Akira is just a douchebag.
Akira's just a fuckhead all the way through.
Fucking pretty boy know-it-all. And his stupid perfect nose.
I can smell good fish.
Oh, I hate him for his good nose.
Motherfucker.
So they start up, you know, with the introductions and the announcements and stuff. The master of ceremonies is Ishiki from the Northern Light Storm, and he's wearing a full-on suit, which freaks out a few people. But he says, like, you know, there's all these different, you know, divisions who really help our school to run the way that it does, and we're going to have some important representatives from, you know, the very best ones, because it's traditions for the heads of each division to take turns as judges for the Fall Classics final match. So, we have the dean of the Institute, Senzaimon Nakiri. We have the head of the tourism division, Gin Dojima, who has, of course, been showing up a lot as, you know, this kind of senpai type of figure for Soma, and he judged at least one round before at this point. And the last judge is the head of the Institute's research and development division, Leonora Nakiri, who is Alice's mother. And it's kind of a great sort of introduction because, you know, there's like this full body image of her coming in with this regal looking dress, her hair is flowing behind her, and everyone's like, oh wow, she's so pretty. And I was like, oh, hi mom.
What's up, mom?
So they're like saying, oh, she's so great. You know, she's beautiful. She's intelligent. She directs and oversees that corporation and stuff. And so Ishiki hands her the microphone to introduce herself. And she's like, my name is Leonora Nakiri. I live in Denmark. I not speak your language very good. Being judge will be will be hard. And they're like, she can't speak Japanese word. Crap. Fuck you. She's Danish. She's awesome. I just like that she's introduced with this, like, oh man, she's so perfect and everywhere. It's just like, how you say Japanese words? Yeah, she's very friendly with her daughter and stuff, who just, like, comes onto the floor, like, on her own, and Harry's like, go sit back down! You're not supposed to be here! And Leonora's like, oh, how are you doing, Leonora? Arina, you're mad, like always. It's because you're stupid bitch of a daughter.
Grumble, grumble.
Okay, maybe she doesn't call her a bitch. But then Leonora kind of says, oh, you're Yukihira, right? Well, Alice, she lost to you in the first round. That was really surprising. And Alice, she was so sad. She called me, you know, on the phone and cried to me for like 9 hours straight. And I was like, don't tell anyone about that. But then Leonora says, you know, I never thought she would lose. So now I've come to look forward to your cooking. And if it doesn't taste good, I might get mad. And she's, you know, kind of smiling at him, but she looks like she's a fucking vampire, basically. So it's weird, like, how much characterization she gets in, like, 2-3.5 pages, basically. There's, like, this whole gambit to get used to her.
That's the quality of a good storyteller.
So Ishiki's like, all right, the time to start cooking is almost upon us. And, like, the roof of the dome starts to open up. And, you know, the moon starts to shine through it. And, like, you know, this is the true form of the Heaven's Moon Arena. Cooking time for the final match will last approximately 2 hours. It begins the moment the full moon has completely appeared and ends when it fully crosses the skyway and is once again hidden from sight. And someone looks up and he's like, that is so cool.
Also, doesn't that slightly change when it ends based on your, you know, perspective of where you're looking at the moon from?
And heaven forbid that a cloud should show up on the night of the competition.
Then you're like, ah, shit, do we have a clock? Ah, oh, we have a clock, we're good. All right. It's not as dramatic, but when the clock says zero, then you're done.
So like, Leonardo's like, oh, this feels so Japan-y to me. And I was like, oh, mother, you have such a weird view of Japan. It really is a quiet, normal place in here. It's like, go sit down!
I like that term. It feels so Japan-y to me.
Gonna have to start using that. That's so Japan-y. But yeah, you know, the moon starts to cross out, and Ojima's like, oh man, this reminds me of when I was in their shoes, you battling the final match of that classic, and all the chefs who stood in this stage have looked upon this very moon, and there's, you know, this great anticipation,
And the Dean says, chefs, prepare for battle. And the moon finally creeps out and becomes fully visible. And they're like, now, begin cooking. And it's just this two-page spread of all three of the cooks rushing into action. Love the art in this series, by the way. It's just three guys cooking, but it looks so awesome.
It's just, it's the way they all look. It's so much detail added to everything. And I love how even in this you can see they're getting started. Like, you can see the shrimps or the craze coming out from one side. You know, Akira picking up the fucking, like...
I've got spices!
And then you see Soma just throwing it in a bowl. Like, let's go. It's very cool. I'm excited to actually see, like, a cooking battle. It's been...
Yeah, this is the first, like, actual Shokugeki that we're gonna see, like, in full on the podcast.
And I still have a lot of this series to catch up on. So this, it's been a while since I've read Shokugeki Battle, so I'm very excited.
Alright, with that, let's move on to our newest Jumpstart series, Gakyo Hote, School Judgment.
Are you sure this isn't... is that right? I thought it was called Phoenix Wright the Junior Years.
I don't fucking care, this manga's awesome.
Oh, I absolutely agree. But my god, like, having...
It is so... This is a post-Phoenix Wright world.
Like, I just...
The first two-page spread is not one, but two different characters making the objection pose.
Not only that, during the chapter, there's a moment where they're like, oh, he's practicing his cool objection poses. And I was like, Jesus, they do that in Phoenix Wright!
This is a genre now. My god. Oh. But yeah, we get this, like, introductory page for the set of the premise, which is like, oh, 2012, there are problems with bullying. 2013, there were issues with corporal punishment. The world is experiencing an era of educational collapse. In order to purge such evil running rampant across the field of education, the government introduced a revolutionary new system into grade schools all across the country. The name of this revolution, the school judgment system of the children, by the children, and for the children. A ruthless classroom arbitration is now in session.
I like that they made it so dramatic, and thank God they got Obata for the artwork, because I'm like, this should be the stupidest premise I've ever heard. They're just like, things in school are so bad, we've legally made it binding that kids can make court cases and decisions.
This feels like, this actually gave me a lot, made me think a lot of, oh crap. What was that series that they made in Bakuman? It gave me such a PCB vibe.
That'd be great if that's what Obata was at like after fucking Obata after they finished Bakuman. He was just like, I kind of do want to do PCB.
And Obata was like, no, dude, that's bad for you. And he's like, no, the manga, the fake manga came up with.
Yeah, come on now. Get it together. What was that name? What was the full name of the series?
I had to ask you for the pre. Pretty Class.
I don't think that does any of it. But anyway, yeah, the series Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts.
That'd be great. The Kingdom Hearts Phoenix Wright Junior crossover manga.
Gorge.
He's just like, I found you guilty of a bad heart! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do! As he turns into a fucking heartless... No!
Objection, Your Honor! anyway. So, we then get into the main plot of the chapter, which is this student creeping in with a pair of just kid scissors.
Like, super lame, like, has trouble cutting paper scissors.
They're not safety scissors, but they're, you know, that size scissors. And there's, but it's like really intense, you know, the perpetrator, you know, there's like a close up their eyes as they're like sweating and you're snip, snip, snip. And there's narration. It always begins with a classroom session. Our class became divided that day. His body completely dismembered. And Mio was just like, who the fuck would you even kill with a pair of little kid scissors? Well. And then it's like, oh wait, there's a little tank and there's water. And it's you kill a fish. Okay.
I don't know how the fuck you kill a fish with a pair of scissors. Those fuckers that are so goddamn fast. I would I would be in there for like an hour and a half. Like, damn it! Don't you sleep?
I just think it would be difficult to get through the bone. Honestly, That's a lot of gripping power.
Especially because that looks like a big fish later on. Like, it's not like it's a fucking mm-hmm. minnow or goldfish or something like that. It looks like a fucking like actual size fish.
So then we cut forward, and there's like, oh, it's Tenbin Elementary School, and the teacher says, oh, here are two of our new, you know, students, treasure students, Pine Hanzuki and Apaku Irugami. And Pine is like, hi, I'm a transfer student, Pine Hanzuki. My favorite Pretty Cure character is Cure Peace.
Desu desu!
She, like, flashes a V sign, and all the guys are like, oh, Pine-chan, yeah! And Abaku, like, has, like, a 3DS, and he's like, I'm Abaku Inigami, and my hobby is Ronpa, which it explains is basically, like, using reasoning to refute another's argument and to verbally defeat them. So the teacher's like, you can't bring video games to school. And he's like, I'll use a light Ronpa as part of my self-introduction. Why is one not allowed to bring video games to school? And she's like, because it's a place to study. Ah, but what about recess and playground equipment? Aren't those also unnecessary? She's like, well, no, recess is refreshing when fun. Ah, but you can play card games during recess, but not video games? Well, but, an ideal school ought to have one where an environment where one can concentrate to the max during class and can have maximum fun during recess. Well, if you had video games stashed inside your desk, you'd be distracted and unable to focus on class, wouldn't you? Objection! It's like close up of his face as he's like getting deeper and deeper into his arguments.
I love it because I can continue to do like I did last week where I just had Phoenix Wright music playing in the background during this.
And he's like, oh, it's a groundless speculation. This is supposed to be the job of the teacher to hold our attention. And, like, there's just this panel where she's got this, like, completely broken expression on her face. The panel behind her is cracking, and it's, like, in negative. And so she goes, sorry, today the ban on video games is lifted. And he's like, that's a run puck. Just being this complete jerk ass to the teacher, but getting away with it because he's such a smart ass.
Oh, good times. I'm going to have fun with this series.
But immediately there is like this very different set of first impressions that these characters have. You know, all Pine is popular with both the girls and the boys. And everyone's like, God, that kid is such an asshole.
He's like, oh, hey, you know that guy who had to constantly prove how intellectually superior he was over everyone else? He's not very well liked.
And I do like that. Yes. I really do. Because nobody likes that guy, honestly.
Nobody likes the guy who spent 20 minutes berating his teacher for fucking not letting him play video games in class.
A lot of people could really take that advice. It's like, it's not always important to be right all the time. Mm-hmm. No one likes you if you do that. There's a limit you can't pass. And I've passed that limit a few times before. But only with people who really like me, so I can get away with it. But anyway, so Abaku greets Tento Nanahoshi, who is very obviously kind of being picked on. Everyone's like ignoring him. And so he's like got this really weird like bob haircut, and it's got like mushroom patterns or something like that. They call him like a disco ball bob cut or something like that. It's really weird hair. He's got polka dots in his hair. He's weird. So anyway, he says, I'm your attorney in the upcoming class session. And there's this thing, he's like, oh, he's a lawyer. And then he, like, hangs out with him, and he's like, oh, he's an attorney? That's weird. And then Pine comes in, and she's like, I am your prosecutor! And she's got, like, this fat helper with her whose name is Lolimatsu. Lolimatsu.
Lolimatsu.
Because he's a lowly gun. And he keeps on taking his shirt off at inappropriate times, particularly when she gets mad and has to hit something. And he's like, yes, punish me. He's like, wow, you are really creepy, dude. But yeah, it's like, she's like, I am the pretty prosecutor, Sailor Pine. She like poses with like a magic staff and stuff. It's like, what the fuck?
Every good fucking Phoenix Wright prosecutor needs a gimmick. She's a Sailor Moon character.
I love it. So yeah, she's like, you know, I'm gonna completely defeat you. I'll rip off that utterly harmless little lamb's face mask of yours. You know, and referring to like, oh, I'm so innocent and stuff. And there's more of like an explanation of the school judgment system. But honestly, I think the first initial one is perfectly fine. But they basically do a step. It's like, yeah, you know, the verdict that is reached in these is actually like law, and it's final and stuff. And Abaku's like explaining this to the kid. Whose name I forget. Oh well. Tento. It's not important to remember his name. He's not a main character, right?
I'm sure he'll be in this one case and never again.
Unless he like or is like, oh, I'll be your sister or something like that. That's like the only time he's ever gonna show up, yeah. But so he's like, you know, fortunately, the death penalty is off the table.
I do like that explanation. It was like, all of our decisions are legally binding, but we actually can't fucking give someone the death penalty.
It's like, well, of course you can't. They're kids. It's like, but you could be transferred to Onigashima Ogre Island Elementary School on a distant solitary island, which is basically a prison. A maximum security prison.
Where we anally check our students regularly, apparently, regarding the image you see.
But yeah, he's like, all right, so this is the Suzuki murder and dismemberment case. And Tento explains, like, right, so we had, you know, this this thing where it's like, you know, a shokuiku, which is you raise an animal for the year, and then at the end, you eat it. So we decided to have a fish, a Suzuki. And so we named him Suzuki, and unfortunately, we kind of grew fond of him because of that. It's like, oh, he's so cute with his little star on his cheek. And with his name and stuff. And so the class became divided between different factions, arguing if they wanted to eat or not eat the fish. And basically, all the girls were like, no! The maternal instinct kicked in. But for the boys, they prioritized their appetites. And there was even stumping, as if it were a political campaign. And there's, like, kids, like, sharing drinks in order to gain political favors with people who are only already going to vote that their way. Our kids playing at corrupt politics is amazing. But yeah, they had a vote, and the don't eat faction won. But then, 3 mornings later, the fish was found dead, torn to pieces in his aquarium. Which you see!
That's kind of, yeah, I was like, that's a little sad and gross. I like that fucking star-shaped fish.
Yeah. So, Amaka's like, well, I guess it's natural for the girls to think that the boys didn't react in retaliation. And Tento's like, yeah, and I was the last person on after-school duty. I was the last person to have seen Suzuki. And there were scissors that had a fish scale on them found in my bag when, you know, everyone's bags got checked following the incident. And so he's like, freaking like, I swear I didn't do it. And I did do it. And he's like, and so I was like, all right, well, which way did you vote? And he's like, I voted for eating it, of course. And he's like, And so he's like, all right, this murder dismemberment case, I'll rompa the hell out of it. That's a really weird thing to say.
I'm going to assume that just rompa is just going to be the fucking word of the series, so we're going to hear it all the time.
It's going to be the series Shokugeki, basically.
Yeah.
But while they walk off, there's like a figure walking between them from the shadows, and then it cuts to it sometime later. And there's stuff going on. Abaku is still arguing with the teacher, and they're establishing, like, you know, Miss Hanzuki was expanding her influence, using her expert feigned innocence act, and like, and boys are like offering her food and stuff. It's like, oh, please have my frozen orange and stuff. Well, Inugami, in comparison, he's like, objection! Children's tongues are more sensitive to bitter taste than adults, so please refrain from just flippantly saying, tough it out and eat your green peppers. There are no nutrients that are solely found in green peppers. One can always compensate by eating other vegetables. Besides which, by forcing children to like that, you traumatize them into becoming unable to eat even those foods that they normally have acclimated to over time. And the teacher is so freaked out that she, like, buries her head in the sweet and sour pork pot.
She's like, just shut up and go away. God damn it, kid.
Some boys approach Tento, and they're like, I heard you guys are going to be testifying as witnesses for the prosecution. Don't tell me she, like, threatened you. And he's like, no. She said she gave me 100 demon medals. Ah, you were bribed. Okay. Yeah, but we're still gonna be friends, right? And Tento's like, yeah. Time skip again later on, and so Abaku's like, hey, did you catch my lunchtime green pepper ranpa? If I say so myself, that was especially... Denda's like, why do you have to argue with everyone? Because you're scaring people, and it's like making you a loner and stuff. He's like, so that's why you chose to vote to eat it. What are you talking about? Well, even if all the boys voted to eat, why would you, who had volunteered for the bothersome creature keeper chore, want to let Suzuki die? And he's basically concludes like, there's one more girl in the class than boys. So how could the vote? Rather, there's one more boy in the class than girls. So how could, if they divide by gender, they have voted to let not eating it win? And he's like, oh, also, check this thing out. Look, a ladybug. Poke. He just pokes it. And Denda's like, don't kill it. He's like, no, it's playing dead, see? I did something completely harmless, but it engages thanatosis, a brilliant reflex reaction. And he's like, back in the day, when there were dinosaurs to hide from, they were probably doing it, like, consciously.
Somehow I doubt dinosaurs gave a fuck about eating ladybugs.
Especially T-Rex.
Yeah, like, not the T-Rex. It was just like, are you fucking kidding me?
T-Rex stomping around. Hakuna Matata!
Just like, what, you have a trash can full of those? No, I'm not going to waste my time.
I'll say this thing, it's like, yeah, insects thought, no, it's just that those who have the instinct to survive because evolution, come on, man. God damn it, Abaku, you call yourself smart, fuck you. He's like, you're just like this ladybug, Tenso. You're not the only one either. They may start as intentional acts, but evasion and defeatist mentality can become habits. No matter who you are, your resolve to ranpa is tested when facing an overwhelming despair. And he, like, see, like, imagine this scene of, like, people dead everywhere.
Oh, it's
and apparently this is a scene from his past, too, because there's a young him and, like, two other people that he, like, refers to at one point as being, like, awesome graduates. And so basically it's like he's rumored to have been to that ogre school that they talked about at some point. Mm-hmm. So I guess seemingly they were framed for this horrific act and sent to this school after seemingly killing their classmates. This series is crazy.
It's crazy, but goddamn, if you don't take it like at face worth, like, all right, let's see where this is going.
So the way that this gets broken down additionally is by Pine, who basically explains this aloud to Lolimatsu while in her mansion, while she is bathing. And he is scrubbing her hair while wearing a blindfold. And she, like, poses with, like, determined fist pump, like, across her breasts to not see her, like, 12-year-old nipples. Because, Jesus Christ, that's weird. So,
I would just like to note, one of the main prosecutors at Phoenix Wright, Francisca Von Karma, is, like, an 18-year-old who whips people. And we
But she's 18.
Well, no. And we see in this image here, there's three characters, and the one in the back looks like a girl who has some kind of whip, and she's wearing a leather bustier. So
I see that now, yeah.
I'm imagining we're probably going to get a Francisca Von Karma in this.
God damn it. So, like, while she's, like, thinking of this, there's, like, a little panel that's like, meanwhile, Inagami was practicing cool objection poses. And finally, the class arbitration session. It's like this little throwaway panel, just like, he wasn't doing anything. But there's a funny joke. And now we'll actually do the trial. So, Pine calls in a bunch of people. They establish that the judges in this system are all babies.
With really old-looking faces.
Because the stress of judging so many, like, trials makes them age extremely quickly.
But they can't be any older because otherwise they would assume that all the children are biased.
Yeah. It's so weird.
This is like the weird aspect of the series.
This is like the weirdest part of the series.
I haven't completely wrapped my head around this one.
Benjamin Button Judge. Oh, God. So, like, a bunch of, like, witnesses get called up. And it looks like Pine's got this huge advantage. Tento's friend, who testifies against him, actually says, like, you know, I kind of, like, made this comment after the vote concluded where I was like, man, I wish that we could make sashimi out of Suzuki. So, you know, I bet he took me seriously and did it for us, you know, which is why, as his friend, I ask that you consider extenuating circumstance, what is it called? And it's like he's trying to say extenuating circumstances, basically to lighten the sentence, but he doesn't know the term because he's a kid. And so Pine's like, that's all, bye.
Damning evidence, thank you.
And so she's like, you know, we've got motive, we've got a sealed room, we've got evidence, all the stuff needed for the prosecution to conclude cutely that the accused without a shred of doubt is guilty. Pose.
I'm trying to imagine, like, the fucking how this would go in Phoenix, right? We've got motive, conk, sealed room, conk, evidence, and you do, like, the fucking sweating pose at that point.
And then she poses.
Yeah. I rest my case.
And so she poses, the people in the crowd cheer because they want a guilty verdict. She's like, you're not even attempting to cross-examine my flawless logic. Perhaps I did make too much of you after all. And then there's a rumbling sound as Ivanka contemplates his next move. And he gets, like, fanged teeth, and he's like, the trap is set. And he, like, casts his arm, and he's like, the defense hereby requests to call one witness to the stand. And he's like, this farce ends now. That half-baked prosecutor, and you, the true perpetrator, who is here inside this room. Of course they are. Prepare yourselves. I will romp the hell out of you. And there's this, like, huge, like, image of him, like, in posing in the background while all the other people involved in the case are, like, in front of his hand. And then there's like, two pages where he's like, well, that's it for this week, so who is the actual murderer? How was the crime committed? The key to it all is the name of my witness, which I'm going to obscure. And it's someone who has appeared within the pages of this chapter. And here's a hint. Thanatosis. Well, bye. To be continued. Like, you son of a bitch, you got me for next chapter. You brilliant motherfucker.
Nick, how do you like it?
Oh, I love it. It's so weird, but it just works. And that's fucking manga.
I love it. I mean, I'm somebody who loves... Have you played the Phoenix Wright games at all?
No, but I have seen a couple of playthroughs.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's basically all I really need.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not missing a whole lot by picking that piece of evidence for yourself.
Oh, no, I didn't click on that piece of evidence myself. Yeah.
So, I mean, coming from somebody who's a huge Phoenix Wright fan, I'm like, I love the potential of the series. Plus, Obata's art is...
Gritty.
Disgusting. Like, it's amazingly good. So I'm into it. Here's the thing, guys. I don't care what you're doing right now. Stop what you're doing. Go to www.shonenjump.com/issue-survey. In the survey for this week, it asks you what you feel about this series. Put a good ranking on it, because I swear to God, if E-Robot makes it in... And this doesn't make it any further, I'm going to be very upset with you all and myself. Yeah. So make sure you do that. It only takes a couple moments. This isn't Judo's. This isn't High Fly Cluster. The stakes are real this time, guys.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, just not E-Robot. Please, not E-Robot. Rank that shit bottom.
I think I did.
Oh, God. But yeah, that is all for Gakuhode. We'll have it for at least two more weeks. Looking forward to talking about it, especially seeing how this case continues to unfold.
I'm looking
for... Anyway, he says that it's someone who's been seen in this chapter, but it could just be, like, this person in the shadows and it is not, like, actually anyone who's you've gotten a good look at.
I bet it's the fish, Nick.
The fish.
They killed a fake fish.
I actually think that might be part of it, because, like, you know, you could have faked the little star thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was someone who was like, you know, I've got to rescue this, make sure that this fish is safe, and, like, took it home and replaced it with a similar fish.
Okay, here's the thing. If you like Takaje or Takajo no Aigeha, I don't care. You can vote for that as well. Just for the love of God, make sure you vote and do not let E-Robot in.
Please.
I'm 90% sure Jump won't even allow E-Robot in. If they were worried about... If it took them monumental kind of, like, fan pressure before they put Shokugeki no Soma in the magazine, I don't think E-Robot was going to make it in.
But just in case.
And even then, just make sure you vote, because they never said, hey, we're only going to do one series each time. Maybe there's a chance that if there's a lot of support for Gakke Hotel and or Hotai and Takajo no Aigeha, maybe they'll put both in. Maybe they'll serialize both, so... Give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Make your voice heard, goddammit. Anyway, One Piece. Bellamy the Pirate.
Bellamy the Pirate. Got a chapter focused on Bellamy, Chris. How'd you like it?
It was a sad chapter, Nick.
It is pretty sad. It's actually fucking intense, too, though.
I love the ending to it.
I kind of highly doubt that Bellamy's going to be a straw hat at this point.
You never know, Nick.
We'll see. Yeah. Chapter 769, Bellamy the Pirate. Law continues to fight with Doflamingo. He manages to get in his injection shot. And then he surrounds the whole castle with room and throws a big chunk of it that Doflamingo had cut off with his string powers and tries to just, like, toss the big chunk of the castle into Doflamingo. He sums up a bunch of his strings, turns them into a web, and blocks it. Law crushes the building, just, like, as it's being chopped up by the spider web, just, like, dressed the rubble at Doflamingo. Doesn't seem to work. Doflamingo gets away. Law tries to attack him again with his, using a scalpel technique. Doflamingo grabs his hand. He's like, stop that. Stop it.
No.
Stop it. He's like, he's like, quit using attacks you know won't work. If you truly wanted to kill me, you would have seen out your plan to pit Kaido against me. There are plenty of ways to get rid of someone you can't match on your own, but you let your feelings for Corazon override it all. The instant you decided you just had to get back at me personally was the instant your death was inevitable. Such a badass line after all that stuff. It's just like, I don't care you had your big emotional flashback. Fuck you. You're an idiot to come here yourself. You had a good plan. You fucked it up, you asshole.
You had a good plan, but you decided you just had to do it personal, didn't you? Yeah.
So, he even says, like, you know what that message was, by the way? You know, the one that he tried to send? Yeah, he was trying to save Dressrosa. If you hadn't screwed up on that snowy day, these countless tragedies might never have occurred. And so I was like, oh, even you call them tragedies? And he's like, yeah, good point. Such a dick.
He's like, you know what? I'm going to reward you a little good comment. I'm going to put my leg, cover it with string, then I'm going to drop from the ceiling and dismember your goddamn arm. Goddamn!
While also saying, oh, by the way, even if you got that message away, would have still done all that stuff. So what Coruscant was trying to do was completely worthless anyway. Oh, and the fact that you ate the Appa fruit, the fact that you ran away, the fact that you lashed back at me on Punk Hazard, the fact that you're here now, yeah... Gotta get back at all over all of that. Even the fact you were influenced by the other D to challenge me directly, it's reality now. It happened, so I forgive you for it. The same way I forgave my father and brother with death.
God damn!
Just leg dropped his fucking arm off.
It's such a fucking, like, I don't know why. I love the way Odo can do some action scenes, because he just makes it look so visually cool. And there's something about the way, like, the leg over it just laced with, like, razor string. And he's like, I'm just going to drop from the ceiling. So it's not even going to cut your arm off. I'm going to drop from the ceiling, and then upon hitting the ground, my razor string will cut through your arm. Suck it. And then I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, you just know that it's like, okay, well, maybe Law can, like, patch himself up somehow because he does have the super healy fruit, but Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I mean, I accept the fact that it's going to be back. I didn't look at it. I was like, holy shit, he lost his arm forever! I've read enough manga to this point to know people don't generally lose arms unless they can grow them back, and Law's power makes sense for doing it. But I just love how vicious it seems. And just immediately followed up with, oh, and I'm going to forgive you the same way I forgave my family, with death. Because it's just not an execution unless you use hot lead. So fucking cool.
He's like, there's very definitive. He's like, you know, I could just, you know, continue chopping you up like this, but I'm gonna specifically shoot you with the lead bullet. Because fuck you. Also, it's the same way he killed his father and brother, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's fucking so hardcore.
Meanwhile, the Doffy Double gets finally defeated. And Dribble's like, what's that? Oh no, it's the double! It's been torn to bits! And, let's see. Doflamingo's like, I guess the cage was a bit too small to keep that one locked inside. And, Luffy and, is still fighting with Bellamy, and, who's still being controlled and stuff. And Luffy's like, he's gonna die. You've gotta stop this. Stop this now. You've gotta stop him. And Bellamy is like, basically. He doesn't say anything, he grits his teeth. I shouldn't have said he said anything. Whatever. So Doflamingo's like, alright, you did enough. Setting you free. Just like you have been. And Bellamy has a flashback. And he remembers when he first encountered Treball. And he's like, hey, we're all from Nordis. That's a rich city. What do you want from us? He's like, I hate that boring, stuffy old town. But the Don Quixote family is the pride of the North Blue. We want to be a legit pirate crew just like you guys. We ain't like those other pirates with dreams in their heads. And so Doflamingo's like, I'll lend you the use of our symbol. But if you lose to anyone, you're giving it back. Cut to Luffy kicking Bellamy's ass. So yeah, Bellamy, you know, remembers like, you know, I don't... He basically said, I have no use for weaklings. And he's like, don't worry, won't lose. He lost. Remembers Luffy being like, oh, you've changed, Bellamy. Yeah, I don't hold anything against you. And then getting the call to kill him. Dillinger mocking him is like, oh, you know, if you screw it up, then I'm supposed to finish you off. And Doflamingo telling him is like, do I have to spell this out for you? You and I have different aims in the world. But Luffy, meanwhile, is like, we're friends. I can't beat you. So the person he's allies just turn on him. The person he was just his opponent is still standing beside him. Time for Bellamy's face turn. Nope! Uses his spring powers and he says, do you remember this move? Spring Hopper! And he starts bounding back and forth across the walls. And he says, you've gotten stronger, but so have I. The destructive power of this move is far greater than before. And Luke's like, you're going to kill yourself if you do that. No! Shut up! Stop feeling concerned about your enemy. I understand when I chose the wrong man to idolize and how pitiful that makes me, but I don't want to be pathetic enough to lash out at the man I chose to follow just because his answer wasn't the way I wanted it. Here, if I'm going to be an idiot, I've got to see that choice through to the end. This is my final battle, so indulge me.
I fucking love that. I love this moment. You know, some people might critique, like, oh, he's like, I'm going to be an idiot at the end, but I was like, I like that this is a character who realized he fucked up, and his first thought wasn't to be like, I'm going to get revenge on Doflamingo for being a monster. His first thought was like, I made a really stupid choice, and I really can't blame it on anyone else but me that this wasn't the guy I made him out to be. You know, it's not Doflamingo's fault, and I'm going to have to just live up to my choices. He's in a frustrated state at this point, but I love his moment of being like, and just because the man I chose to follow, like, I'm not going to lash out just because his answer wasn't what I wanted it to hear. Yeah, I like that character thought. Like, you don't see many people admit that. It's like, you know, you were kind of the North Blue asshole who decided to just join up with this guy because you're like, he's strong, and then I'm going to laugh at everyone else's dreams for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I really dug this, and I'm excited. I can't help but imagine this might have the exact same ending when Luffy just punches him once and knocks him out, but I'm excited to see where this is going to go.
Yeah, we'll see. So let's move on to Takuno Ageha.
I have Seven Deadly Sins real quick.
Yeah, what am I talking about?
Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 106, Barrel's Evil Eye. And there's...
Also, technically, we missed Hi-Fi Cluster, but fuck it.
Okay, we did actually miss Hi-Fi Cluster, and I didn't have much to say on it this week because I didn't really read it. All I can really tell you about it is that it's...
I know a girl shows up at the end.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, they you know, catch up with the vehicle. Peta looks into it using his vision power, and he's like, there are two Hi-Fi Cluster users in the car, and one of them's a young girl! And I was like, okay. Don't care. It still ends in fortune. I feel bad because I'm like, at the same time, this was around the point that World Trigger started to get good, so maybe I should pay attention on the off chance it happens, but. Meh. Anyway, Seven Deadly Sins, 126, or 106, Barrel's Eye. So, we follow up last week where we're now hearing why Melodia says objection to receiving medals. And it's the weirdest reason ever. I object to those medals of honor. At least. That's what some folks here would like to say, right? What? What? What would you say that for? Like, I understand you're like, look, some people aren't happy with me getting the medals, but what a weird way to be like, I object, is what some people here would probably be saying, am I right? Like, what would you just say, like, I don't think some people here agree with that or something? Like, it's just a weird phrasing. But three guys do approach. They are called the Pleiades of the Azure Sky. I don't know. There's a guy with a stupid mustache, some other tall guy, and then a really short guy who's particularly muscular and has a bowl cut. And their names are Platinum Dogedo, Platinum Wadio, and Diamond Death Pierce. So these guys show up, and they're like, we just want to see how strong the legendary knighthood is that rescued the kingdom from evil. So how about it, Captain of the Seven Deadly Sins, Melodious? I'm like, so these guys don't even object to the fact that the Seven Deadly Sins are getting medals, at least based off of what they've said thus far. So the taller guy says, I'll fight him. And all of a sudden, Hawk says, wait, stop right there. Magic, 290. Force, 470. Spirit, 100. Combat class, 860. And everyone's like, what's that? And we see an image of a necklace around Hawk's neck, and it flashes back, and it's an object that Merlin gave him. And the entire time, he's like, can I just get the reverse version of the potion you gave to Diane? You know, something that'll make me super huge? And she's like, I have this. This is really cool, though. You get to see everyone's power levels. And he's like, oh, shit, that's much cooler. Give me that. So basically, that's what's going on here. We've seen that this guy has a power level of 860, Nick, and he's fighting against Melodious, and he's punching at him, and Melodious just dodging all of his blows, and he punches the guy in the side of the head, and you know the guy falls over, and they're like, well, the fight's done. He gets back up, and he attacks Melodious again, and he gets punches, and he looks like he's down, and he gets back up. And he does it like three more times. He gets punched, gets knocked down, just keeps going, regardless, keeps getting back up. Till finally, the pig Hawk looks at Melodious and is like, magic, 400, force, 960, spirit, 2010, combat class, 3,370. And Melodious beats the guy and he's like, next? And I was like, what a stupid chapter with a stupid, stupid development. I fucking hate power levels in manga. It is an awful idea every time. Oh, yeah. Man, it was just such a weird chapter. It's like, hey, some people here won't agree with us gaining rewards. So three guys who have no qualms with us gaining rewards come up to challenge us just to see if we really were worthy. I don't get what they were going to do. Like, if they beat them, what were they going to be like? Ha! So thanks for saving the kingdom since we weren't here, even though we're, I guess, better than that. It just seems really weird. Just as this odd way to introduce a fucking power level system. Ugh. Anyway. Takujo no Egaha.
Right. So this chapter introduces Ageha's first big opponent, the first member of the Golden Successors, you know, the 13 people he's got to defeat in order to accomplish his goal and stuff. The thing about this guy is that he basically seems sort of like the antithesis of Ageha. Like, he is incredibly openly lewd with women, and when Ageha first meets him, he's being swarmed by women in their underwear, including one who is naked from the waist up and shoving her tits in his face. And he's just like, eh, they don't cut it. They're too solid, not comfortable enough. And they're like, what the fuck is your deal? He's like, I just like using boobs as pillows. And they're like, what are you...
I love that they're, like, chasing her around. And it's like, Tara, if you're sleepy, then sleep with me! Now sleep with me!
And he's just like, eh, whatever.
Even weirder is he says, I'll do things with you later, so wash your panties and stay put. God damn!
So he's like the complete opposite of Ageha because he has no qualms with doing things with women even while he's playing table tennis, but he doesn't give a shit about them. He's not turned on by them at all. So okay, it's just like, how enviable. I mean, how disgraceful. So, Tora, the guy, is like, oh, yeah, someone as talented as me, I can play table tennis and do a girl at the same time. And she's like grabbing her in the speech bubble. It's like hiding her like entire body. She's going, ah! And he's like, I was told to destroy you, but at a point like you will probably put me to sleep. Geha gets all pissed off because he's not even taking him seriously. They start to play. Tora looks like he's getting bored during their volley, so Geha uses a loop drive to drive Tora back, but he returns it and just smashes it for the first point. And at that point, he's like, by the way, I'm Takitora Toro, in the golden age, there was a player known as the fastest, and I have inherited those techniques, and like lightning crackles around his arm. I'm a golden successor. So, this is a weird chapter.
It's still funny. It's still amusing to me. I like that this guy is just such a fucking ridiculous caricature of a womanizer playboy. It's also kind of cool. He's one of the golden successors. Like, let's jump right into that and see what these other golden successors can do. But at the same time, sucks as a place to leave off and jump start. Because I'm like, oh, we get our first real opponent and the series is potentially done.
Also, I want to check something real quick. Let me see if I can. I guess not. I was going to say that all three of the Jumpstart series this week feature a topless woman, but actually, E-Robot does not.
pure fucking nudity.
Actually naked from the waist up.
Yeah, then no, but it also features a fucking boob missile, so I don't know.
Yeah, more than makes up for that, that with all of the boob fondling and stuff. So, yeah.
And I mean, Jump is a series that's supposed to be aimed at 13-year-old boys, so it kind of makes sense.
I like how, you know, all that time we're just like, yeah, I'm not sure about bringing in Food Wars because of all the kind of stuff. Hey, guys, by the way, we're going to be bringing in, three new chapters of every new series that comes out at the same time as Jump. It's like three in a row. Perverted as fuck.
pervert series.
Well, the last one, at least, is not heavily rotating.
No, the last one...
But it does feature, like, completely naked 12-year-old and her creepier assistant.
No, yeah, it's probably just a temporary thing just to hook a few people who are just like, I don't care about this lawyer stuff. That chick might get naked more often!
Oh, God. But yeah. It was still entertaining, but it was just, like, so fucking weird. So... Yeah, Takajo Naga... Definitely strong second out of these three. Please no E-Robot, please. But Toriko. Toriko Gourmet 303, first encounter. Last time the Monkey King Bambina appeared before the group and everyone was like, oh shit! Don't look at his boss, don't look at his boss, don't look at his boss. Oh shit!
I saw his boss, shit!
And so the Bambina just kind of like, Harry just like, drooling absentmindedly. And Torika's like, last time, I wasn't interested in taking any measurements, but this time is different. Our little device probably won't get it wrong. I've got to see for myself. He's kind of smaller than I thought, except for his package. Okay.
Except for those enormous balls.
So he like shoots the laser into Bambina to measure him. And Bambina goes, just freaks out. Immediately Torika starts to freak out. And he's like, how does it look, Sonny? And Sonny looks down and it's like, ball boom. It's called a ball boom.
Yeah, you know what, Nick? You are absolutely right. Humor really does distract from these moments.
And it's the big moment. He's like, capture level 6,000. It's like, ball boom.
Thanks. I couldn't tell it has an enormous pair of testicles from the next page.
Yeah, just like, oh my god, it's got a capture level 6,000. Don't look at his balls, don't look at his balls, don't look at his balls. It's called Ball Boon, you can look at its balls.
I dare so say it wants you to.
There's this, and so there's like intense narration. While Sunny was in shock over the high capture level, Zero was already taking an attack stance. As if acting in unison, Toriko and Coco fell into support positions almost simultaneously. Meanwhile, as Sunny recovered from the shock, he gave one single blink. It lasted a mere 0.1 seconds. That was all the longer his eye... All the longer his eyes were shut? Work on that grammar, guys. That was how long his eyes were shut, or something like that. But in the wild world of nature, that's enough time for a fatal mistake to occur. And you see, like, from Sunny's perspective, like, his shut eye, and then his opening eye, and there's just a flash of smoke and limbs and heads everywhere.
It looks primarily like it's zebras as well.
It does look mostly to be zebra. But I think those are Coco's legs. And there's a rib cage, and there's femurs, and just gore everywhere. And, like, this tremendous burst that knocks Sunny backwards as, like, the gland, like, blows around. And Sunny goes, ah, what? What happened? Where'd he go? Where'd everybody?
Where's Komatsu? Where's the Monkey King? And he looks over at Zebra and he's like, ah! And he like tears up and he falls to his hands and knees and starts screaming and is just like, the sheer despair that overtook the world in a mere second rained down on him like a torrential downpour.
I survived!
He's like that. All right, he's like that, time to go home.
He's like that one dude in Left 4 Dead who was getting chased by the tank, and everyone else got killed, and he just snuck into the safe. I was like, I did it, guys.
We made it, guys. Guys,
whatever. I get the shotgun next. All right, let's dig into this a little bit. I do like the art decision of like I blinked and showing it in like one panel of like the brief amount of light he got, and then the next panel just the absolute chaos of what he saw. I thought that is very stylistically cool.
That is really cool.
I didn't care for the 6,000 thing. Like they act like it's a big deal. Capture level 6,000. I'm just like, I get that's huge. You know, it's like six times the largest number we've really seen of any creature Toriko and anyone's come up against. Like, they fought the Gorilla Taurus, and I think it was like 1,000 and something like that.
Yeah.
So it is a big number. But
numbers are meaningless at this point, yeah, because we started off with Toriko struggling, not struggling, but having a fight against 5.
Yeah.
And then he pretty easily took on something that was like 20. And then it was like, oh, the 4 beasts are like over 100 each. And then they combine together into something that's even more powerful, and they beat that. And then even stronger after that, and stronger and stronger. Well,
it's even not so much that as it is, since we've come into the new world, the numbers haven't met very much. They came into the new world, and we saw numbers higher than what we saw with the 4 beasts, and they've beaten all of it without any real kind of struggle or anything like that.
Yeah, so 6 times stronger than the strongest thing that has actually been measured so far, that they beat basically immediately. And this time, it results in Zebra being torn completely apart, which he'll probably be fine because Toriko.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand. When we say I understand they didn't immediately beat the Gorilla Taurus. They, you know, supposedly had a very long, prolonged fight with it. It just all happened off screen, mostly. You know, they blinded it, and then it was like, sometime later, they beat it. So I understand. They had a long fight against the Gorilla Taurus. It took all 4 of them together to beat him down. And this thing is 6 times stronger. But it's just like the number feels so arbitrary at this point to me. I can't grasp the fear behind it that I feel like I should, just because the number's been rising so quickly and hasn't seemed to meant very much for a long time now. And at the same time, I'm also looking at the end of this, and I'm like, I know that you haven't just killed Zebra, Toriko, and Coco. I know that you haven't. There is there's no way you just killed all 3 of those characters off. It's not like, oh, okay, maybe one of them lost an arm and maybe there'll be like a big arc or something like Force. This is either ultimate routine or this is, you know, something, some kind of illusion, or this is, you know, a fucking...
Or one of their cure waters will break and they'll be fine.
Yeah, or someone rains cure water down, like a fucking cure water rainstorm comes by. Something is going to happen and they're going to be fine. Like, I get that this is a chapter that's meant to build a lot of suspense, and to that extent, I get it. I do like it. Seeing Sunny absolutely break down is, you know, an interesting moment. But it's just so hard for me to take Toriko seriously at this point. It's at a point where the series has to kind of prove that it can be a well-written series to me again.
Yeah. If this came at a point, you know, where the series was doing well, then I think that we would not be nearly as hard on it. But the series, over the course of, like, the past year, has really kind of lost our faith because it's just not been very good. And so when you've got that constant kind of negativity, or at least lack of positivity going on, then you're a lot less forgiving or a lot more questioning for moments like these. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. I mean, I thought that overall it was a pretty good chapter, but in terms of like, oh man, what's gonna happen? Just like, I'm not too worried, honestly.
And remember, this happened last arc. Toriko gets fucking blown up in 1 second by the by Heracles, and then his demon took over, revived his body, and it all kind of worked out from there. So it's one of those moments too where I'm like, are they just all gonna, you know, gourmet cell resurrect from here? Like, it's just, I don't know. We'll see where it goes from here. I'm going to try to be optimistic, but it's hard at this point.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's finish up with World Trigger, Chapter 84, Osamu Mikimo, Part 11. So Osamu heads into the press conference And a bunch of people there are like, what are you doing here? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Well, what are you doing? I'm going to answer questions. My name is Osamu Mikumo. They're like, what are you doing? If you have any questions, I'll answer them directly. And so, they're like, yeah, he is the guy who, did the thing a month ago that used his trigger and stuff. But, you know, that matter is closed and stuff. Yeah, you know, don't gang up on him, guys. Like, he said he wants to talk. Let us kill him. So Osamu says, is basically given permission to, like, speak up for himself. And he says, look, thinking back, I do realize the possibility exists that I am partially responsible for, Aftokator getting the information regarding trainee triggers. And so they're like, what do you mean, you know, the possibility exists? You know, it's like, don't you realize the seriousness of this matter? We've lost 32 people. We deserve a better explanation than that. And he's like, I'm not trying to explain things away. Even if I had known the information in my league, I think I would have still used the trigger. That's just how bad the situation was. Oh, you mean even if you had to create further victims? Well, yeah, because, you know, even if there might have been future casualties, I could have done something to save people right then. Oh, yeah, but you were a trainee. If you had been an agent and done stuff properly, then you could have saved them and the information wouldn't have gotten leaked out. And he's like, look, I'm not a hero. I'm not trying to say I'm a hero. I can't do the kind of thing where everyone is pleased with the result. I can only do what I think I should in a way I won't regret later. Oh, you think we're supposed to overlook your mistakes because you're a novice? You don't even seem sorry. What about the victims? What about their families? Basically.
How are you going to take responsibility?
And Osamu's mother, like, raises her fist and is like, those reporters need to be beaten with a stick. Like, I'm going to bend them over my knee.
I like to think she just pokes them with a stick. She's like, you stop being mean to my son.
It's like maintaining the same expression she's always got. Stop it. Stop it. So they're like, yeah, how are you going to make up for the 32 lives that were lost because of you? And he says, I'm going to get them back. Your family members who were taken by neighbors, your friends, will go get them back. You don't have to tell me about taking responsibility. It's the obvious thing to do. And they're like, what are you talking about? You mean going to the neighbor world? And so one of the guys is like, shit, he's blowing in. They're not supposed to know about that. But Commander Kida says, yes, like he said, we are proceeding with plans for a mission to recover the abducted people. In fact, we've succeeded in trial unmanned round trips to the neighbor world. And you're like, ah. He's pretending we've just started to go so that they can spin it into something positive. They're like, oh, this could be dangerous, though. There could be further victims just to save those 32 people. And Kido's like, yes, you're of the opinion that we should just abandon just those 32 and move on. Love how he, like, completely turns that around.
Completely like, makes them look like shitheads.
Yeah. But then he proceeds to say, it's not just about the 32 people kidnapped this time, but the more than 400 citizens who went missing in the very first attack. So, turns it into very positive PR. They're like, oh, but how are you going to decide the personnel for the recovery mission? Is Mikumo included among the members? And Kido says, well, we have to ask for people in A rank or above, which are just the 30 elite members of Border. And whether he will take part in the mission will depend purely on his ability to meet those criteria, while looking pointedly at Osamu. And he's like, all right, I know. And so Kido kind of dismisses him. The reporters disperse, and they're like, oh, man, a mission to the neighbor world. This is a huge story. Running around like puppets on strings. And gets a bit of congratulations from, what's his name? Is it Karasuma?
Yeah.
No, that's the one. Okay. And then his mother comes out to him and says, you know, you almost got killed. Are you sure you want to keep on doing this? Because, you know, when you wanted to enlist 6 months ago, you know, you remember, I was against that. Then you got injured, and I thought, I told you so. But then she goes on to say that, you know, people came to visit her, and even after seeing him motionless in that bed, none of them suggested that he should quit. And now she understands a bit better, because ever since Osamu joined Border, you look like you found what you wanted to do. So, I mean, this would be a bigger moment if we knew more about this conflict, but it's kind of nice that he just has this little, you know, kind of note of confidence from someone as he picks himself up off the ground and, you know, proceeds onward, basically.
And it's just kind of cool seeing a parent involved in the life of a shonen hero, almost always they're mm-hmm. dead or they just don't do anything. So it's kind of cool seeing.
Or their Ichigo's dead and they just fucking tease you with nothing.
Well, I like this, you know, sweet little moment of she's just like, you know, I'm so proud of what you're doing. It's your life. You make your decision. But whenever you're sick of it, I'm going to drag you the fuck back.
With a rope around your neck.
Because I am going to protect you. And that's the moment where I'm like, aw, I wish my mom wasn't so stroked out and could say these kind of things to me. But instead she's just like, I ate all the cookies! Just like, God damn it, mom.
Anyway, so Osama's like, all right, we're going to make A rank as fast as we can. Let's do this, partner. And he was like, yeah, you can count on me. And she was like, I'm so glad for you guys. And Karasuma is like, he's back. You really are a hero. Aww. And then time skip, because next time, the border wars are going to start.
Woo! I fucking love this chapter. This is such a great fucking chapter for Osamu. First and foremost, I feel like you can make motivational quotes, like, fucking, like, you just get a cat hanging.
With a third of the dialogue of this.
You just get a cat hanging on the poster. It's like, forks in the road, don't wait for you to be ready to choose. But seriously, I love this chapter. I love his mantra and shit. You know, if I waited to get all my, waited for all my ducks to be in a row, then I might not get anything done in my life. I didn't have the ability to get a result where everyone would be pleased with it, but I did what I could in a way that I wouldn't regret later. You know, if I could go back in time and do it all again, yes, I'm going to save those people. And that's a fucking hero to me.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it.
It is extremely good. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I love that we had this little break before we jumped into the rank wars, but I'm ready for some fucking rank wars.
I'm looking forward to basically, like, all of manga next week, because we had a really strong week in Jump this time, except for E-Robot. So, yeah.
You gotta get through that last one. Now, I think, I thought I heard there's no One Piece this week, which is a bummer.
This coming week?
I thought I heard, yeah, this upcoming week there's no One Piece, which is gonna suck, because there's already gonna be, like, 2 weeks where there's no Jump, period. But, yeah, I think we're without One Piece this week. It doesn't say it in the magazine, but I think it's something that was kind of revealed later. I could be wrong on that, but
all right. Well, I guess we'll see. All right. Well, I guess that is gonna do it. Though,
actually, no. First, just to bring up, guys, we're kind of doing a lot this month to kind of celebrate the holiday season and to kind of give back and things like that. So I have two announcements for things that are coming next week. I have another thing I'll probably announce next week. I'm going to leave that one a little bit of a secret. But next week, I haven't confirmed the exact details, but we are going to be doing a giveaway. This will be for U.S. residents for just this moment. I'm going to see if there's any way I can kind of do it for other countries, at least the ones that are also connected to Viz Media, you know, UK, Ireland, South Africa. Fuck, what are the other ones? Australia and New Zealand, I think it is. We're going to do a contest and we're going to give away all of the volumes of World Trigger, digital volumes of all of World Trigger up until this point.
So get yourself caught up.
Get yourself caught up for those series of people who didn't jump into it immediately like we did and didn't read it from the beginning, and now that it's good, you want to...
Which, shame on you.
Yeah, I was like, go back to fucking a year ago when it was me and Nick, like, God, this series sucks. Stupid duck faces. But I'll give you guys a
more
chance.
More than a year ago. It's been around longer than that.
Yeah, but, Canadians as well. I had to see if they're in it. It's right now. It's just U.S. residents. I, the way I would be gifting it would only be able to go through U.S. residents. But I think there's a way I can do it through like Amazon Kindle or something like that. There's another way I think I can do it to kind of get other countries. I need to look a little bit more into it. But that'll be next week. There will be a giveaway. I haven't confirmed the exact details. It might be a trivia contest. Might be something else. But one person will get all the copies of World Trigger. And the other thing will be next week, there will be the sequel to the World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor.
Oh.
It is done, it is ready, and I have a special surprise for it that I will reveal next week.
A special surprise.
Special surprise. It is going to be excellent.
Okay, and that said...
No, go ahead.
Okay, we're not going to drop another announcement on you.
No, we're good.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us here on twitch.tv/RoloT. We record the show live Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up. So just follow us on Twitter for updates. He's at RoloT, and I'm at YRuler of Time. Or, you know, if you can't make the show, you know, you can just check us out on channelawesome.com, the new site where all of our old episodes have quickly been transferred over. Mm-hmm. And it looks a lot better. You can see all the tile cards that our tile cards Z-Man has done. By the way, you can check out his work at NewArkFanboy.dfanart.com and iDrawBoost.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. Oh, also, send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read, either in the comments section or email them to us. WeeklyMangaRecap@Yahoo.com is the address. Suggestions like... It kind of works because I switched it around that time.
You did.
I like that. So... I thought a bit about it, and actually our suggestions pool has been a little bit thin because people knew we were doing Naruto-vember, people knew we had Christmas, people knew about, you know, Halloween series and stuff, and so I was just going through, and I was like, they're not quite as big a selection in recent emails, so one stood out to me, and I was like, you know what, fuck it. Let's continue Naruto-vember with Rock Lee's Springtime of Youth.
The unofficial fucking continuation of Naruto-tember. Oh, that's great. All right, boom.
They Darcember or something.
They Darcember. Oh, man. All right.
So look forward to that, everybody. I've heard great things about this series. People say it's better Naruto, use of Naruto characters than Naruto. So let's see how it goes.
Absolutely. All right. Let's do it, guys. Catch you next time. One trigger to my heart back door. Bye.